This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We have the very great pleasure of welcoming Craig Foster to Sideline. Craig was a superstar soccer player, a Socceroo who started playing at the age of 15 for Australia's national team and was the 40th Socceroo captain. Craig made the move into sports broadcasting with SBS covering 5 FIFA World Cups and 4 FIFA Women's World Cups and is also a sports analyst on Stan Sport. Craig is making a huge impact as a human rights advocate, highlighting unethical practices in the game, such as during the FIFA World Cup in Qatar, with the treatment of migrant workers and the LGBTQIA+ community, and is calling for a yes vote for the Voice to Parliament. Thank you so much for joining us to talk us through the Voice to Parliament, Craig, what it is, what it's not, and why Australia should support it.
Great. Yeah, that's good to talk with you about it. It's really important. It's a hugely inspiring year, and I think we need to keep that in mind all the time. You know, the tribe we're all going to feel in being able to make a really strong foundational decision for justice and truth and equality with First Nations people. So, you know, I'm inspired to be part of the generation that's being asked to do this, and it's going to be wonderful when Australia is able to take that move.
On National Sorry Day, representatives from over 20 of Australia's sporting organisations last Friday came together in Sydney and Melbourne in a show of collective support for the Voice to Parliament. AFL Chief Executive-elect Andrew Dillon was there. National Basketball League owner Larry Kesselman released a co-signed open letter encouraging Australian sports fans to vote yes for constitutional change, as well as AFL legend Eddie Betts. What I found really interesting with Eddie Betts was he wasn't saying to everybody, jump on board. His message was to Indigenous people, speak to your elders, ask the question and try to learn a bit more about it. What are your thoughts about his idea about going out and asking questions and getting educated?
Well, critically important. First Nations communities and people and leaders are giving us the gift, actually, as a country, of being able to listen. And we've never done that before to them. And that's a skill that we need as a country in order to make any really important change moving forward. So that's a big load on First Nations communities as well. They're trying to do a number of things, educate Australia on the actual constitution, which in itself is a lot of work. At the same time, educate all of us on history and engage in a certain amount of truth-telling this year. And I read Thomas Mayo and Kerry O'Brien's Voice to Parliament handbook only a few days ago, and I learned things in that I wasn't aware of in our history. And so that's the real point, is that we know now as Australians that we weren't taught the truth of our history post-colonisation. We know that, you know, all of the massacres that are coming out and the missions and the forced labour of Indigenous peoples and the martial law that only recently came to my attention when basically in the 1820s in various parts of the country, the colonies said, look, anyone can just go and indiscriminately kill First Nations people. And these things are in Thomas and Kerry's book, and that's really important. So the reality is that we're trying to elevate our historical knowledge at the same time as having this conversation about what the voice means, what it is practically, what changes are necessary in the Australian Constitution. So that's a massive load. So the point that Eddie was making is for Indigenous peoples to speak to their elders, and we know that around 83-85% of First Nations peoples are in support of the voice. We don't expect 100%. No one expects that from any community in the country. And therefore, that's overwhelming support from First Nations. You know, any polling issue, if you're talking about in the mid-80s, that's immense. And therefore, the rest of us are listening, and I think we have a duty to fulfil this responsibility to First Nations peoples to say it's time that we took a step, so that your right to self-determination can be brought to life, so that you understand that we know the own history of our country, we want to move past that, we want to sit in truth, but we also want justice, because knowing the truth is the first step. Once we know the truth, we say, okay, what do we need to do about that? So it's not enough to just say, well, this is what happened. You know, we had over 400 massacres around the country and so on. What we need to do as a country is say, well, how are we going to, you know, bring this concept of justice to life? What are we going to actually do here to make day-to-day life and the cultural heritage and the future for First Nations people far, far better than it is today? And it's in a parlous state. And the answer to that, that First Nations have gifted us, is the Voice to Parliament and the Uluru Statement. That's what makes them so powerful.
I'm glad that you mentioned the Uluru Statement from the Heart. Could you explain what that is for our listeners who are not familiar with the concept?
Yeah, great. So Over a period of at least 5 years, might have been six, Indigenous leaders from all around the country went through a process of consultation and deliberation. And what that means is bringing together as many of their own First Nations communities and as I said, nations and organisations all around the country together. They had, I think it was well over 1,200 people involved throughout that process with several hundred dialogues, they called them. That means taking the time over many years to sit in town halls and to go into community, everyone sitting down and saying, what is it that we need as First Nations people, given that we've got a right to self-determination? And that means all Indigenous peoples around the world have a right to be consulted in the laws and policies that affect them. Now, this is a human right under the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples of 2007, which Australia is a signatory to. That means as a country, we said to the United Nations, yeah, look, we think that's right. We've seen how the impacts of colonisation and slavery in so many areas of the world have impacted Indigenous peoples. And we recognise their right to be consulted on policy. Otherwise, the world has very quickly learned, well, took us 700 years, but the world learned long ago that if non-Indigenous people are constantly making policy about First Nations, it's never going to be culturally safe, it's never going to be culturally informed, it's never going to listen to the voices on the ground, and we just keep going in circles. So what the Uluru Statement did is they said, this is the path that we want to walk with Australians. And they talked about the torment of their powerlessness, not being involved in decision-making about their own culture and their own people. And so they talk about three things, Uluru Statement. Voice, that means an actual voice embedded in the Constitution, which it must be, otherwise it can just, the next government will just get rid of it again, which is basically what's happened for over 100 years. We've had so many different types of, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander commissions and all of these things. And, you know, a new government comes in and says, look, we're not really into it. We don't think we spend that money. So they've never had the consistency to be able to build the capacity, the capability, the expertise, and to be listened to. So the voice, therefore, needs to be enshrined in the Constitution because that means it can never be taken away from them. Governments have to then listen to the voice. And then the practical implications of the voice, well, where it is, how big it is, what it does, that's for the law, that's for the parliament itself, that's for the actual laws. So that's the voice, and then treaty to talk about the fact that the land was stolen and this concept of terra nullius, which in 1992 the High Court recognised, acknowledged, and said there were people here, obviously, for 65,000 years. And the British came, you know, in their ships and then decided that there's no people here, so we can just claim this land. And of course, there was people here. There's incredible culture over millennia. So we've agreed that now Australia understands that that was the case. And so then we have to say, well, what are we going to do about it? What does justice mean there? Well, we're the only Commonwealth nation with Indigenous peoples that doesn't and has never had a treaty with them. Many countries, Canada, for example, have had a whole number of them, so they just keep updating them, whereas for us, we never had one. So that treaty is about just justice. It's saying, okay, look, this, you know, this country was taken improperly from you. What does that mean today? It means that we recognise your rights to cultural authority and your own culture on your lands and all of these things. Pretty simple. And then finally is truth. Voice, treaty, truth is what the Uluru Statement is about, three steps. And truth-telling, they call it a Makarrata Commission, which is an Indigenous term. And Makarrata means coming together after a struggle. And so what it means is setting up a national and state-based and local commissions for truth-telling. And let's get to the heart. Let's find out the truth about our own country that's actually been denied us. And I'm not sure how your listeners feel, but I just feel absolutely aggrieved and disgusted by that. You can have any view that you want on Australian history, but as Australians, we have a right to the truth of our own history, and we've actually been denied that. So now we're just discovering it. And I think it's a beautiful process. It's a painful one. It can be a really challenging one, but any country worth its salt, any people, which we certainly are, courageous and brave enough, who are committed to fairness and justice, must know the truth of their own country, and they must make wrongs right. And that's the process we're going through now.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so that book, I actually bought it because of your recommendation on your Instagram, The Voice to Parliament Handbook, All the Detail You Need by Thomas Mayo and Keller O'Brien. And I'm loving how it's in layman's terms, which is wonderful.
Yes, very much so.
I was just wondering, Liberal leader Peter Dutton has opposed The Voice to Parliament and is active campaigning against Indigenous Voice referendum, claiming the proposal advanced by the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese will not deliver positive results. What do you say in response?
Well, that's simply not true. It's disingenuous, and I would have liked to think that Peter could have avoided doing what he's doing. So he's also talked about, racializing the constitution. So in other words, he's immediately gone to this concept of race rather than just, the cultural authority and the traditional ownership of First Nations people in this country and the special place that they do hold and should hold as the traditional owners of the country from, who were dispossessed. So that's been very sad. And of course, what that does is it fuels a lot of racism. And it gives people license then to start talking in a racialized manner. And that's dangerous, extremely dangerous, because we know from that type of rhetoric, people get hurt. They get hurt in the street. They get hurt through words, through actions. And it's incredibly dangerous. So that's wrong. And I think, and I saw David Littleproud, who's the head of the Nationals, he came out after those comments from Peter Dutton and said, I don't agree with those, even though I'm part of the coalition. And I congratulate David on that, even though his party is not a supporter of The Voice. Yeah, of course, there are always people who will disagree. The only point is this, that everyone can have concerns and all of us have questions to be answered. And that's wonderful. But we must simply start on the basis of two things. Fact, we have to understand The Voice, do the reading, and know exactly what it is and what it isn't. Otherwise, we're just arguing on false premises, and that's a complete waste of time. That's why disinformation is so powerful, because people put disinformation onto social media to try to divert our attention and our understanding so that we can't have conversations based on reality and fact. So the Voice to Parliament handbook is really powerful. All the information required is at the Voice to Parliament website. Everyone can go there, or on the website of the Uluru Statement.org.au. Really, all the info you need is there. And the second element that we need is goodwill. So in other words, any Australian can disagree with the practical reality, or they might think there's a better way. I happen to disagree, and First Nations are telling you that. But anyway, everyone has a right to their own opinion. However, as long as we engage in the conversation and the dialogue in the sense that we want the best for First Nations, that's all we ask. That's all I ask. Let's have a conversation about any concerns, but if you already closed your mind because you don't care about First Nations, you really don't want them to have any form of rights, and you don't have any compassion in your heart for them, then we're not talking on the same terms. Australia is a country of wonderful compassion, and this year, I think, is the most important year of my life. That's how important I see this referendum as. I am 54 years old, and I'm being asked, in the first time in my lifetime of a voting age, but even within that period, I am being asked to make a fundamental decision to grant First Nations people the right to be heard, and by being heard, to start to change the massive, shameful disadvantage and incarceration that has been existing for over 200 years. So this is a several centuries long issue that our generation is being asked to take that first important step. That takes courage. But I believe in the courage of Australians. I've seen it. I come out of sport. I lived it. And therefore, I have tremendous belief that we can take this step. I think that we're not only pushed back against disinformation and people who just don't want the best for First Nations, and they are around, but not just push back, actually push through. I think that we can push through that, and we can get to a better place where we can look each other in the eye, every single one of us, and say, you know what? I was prepared to do what was right for you. And I see you as worthy. And that's whether it's First Nations people or any of our beautiful multicultural communities. As an Australian, that's what we should be able to say to each other.
You touched on sport. And of course, we've had over 20 sporting organisations supporting The Voice to Parliament. And increasingly, organisations are coming out individually as well as collectively to support The Voice to Parliament. Australian motorsport icon Larry Perkins, six-time Bathurst winner and Motorsport Australian Hall of Famer, has threatened to renounce his Motorship Australia membership because motorsport was one of the organisations supporting in the open letter, saying they're guilting people with the support of The Voice and that it should be apolitical. What are your thoughts about sporting organisations supporting The Voice to Parliament?
Yeah, great. Look, I'm sorry to hear that. What was that gentleman's name?
Larry Perkins.
Great, fantastic. Well, listen, my message to Larry is, listen, mate, let's get together and talk it over. Like, don't close your mind off. There's plenty of time. Let's just keep an open mind here and keep having these conversations, because actually Ford has a deep obligation to step forward in these moments. And in fact, Australia expects them to do so. There's still this kind of, you know, what you see in the media often, oh, you know, sport and politics. Even when Australians and Australian sport is talking about just fundamental rights of First Nations people, and they confuse the two issues. So sport is not saying in a political sense or partisan sense, oh, well, look, we don't like Albo, or, you know, we prefer Scott Morrison. What they're saying is that we want to uphold the rights of our First Nations people to self-determination, which is a human right. And sport has an obligation to do that. Further, sport talks all the time about equality and inclusion and fairness. That's the whole point about sport, and that is what the voice to Parliament is. So what I would say to that gentleman is, I'm happy to come and see you anywhere, anytime, and sit down and have a coffee, and let's talk about the fact that Parliament is the mechanism through which the voice must be brought to life, because policy and laws have to be made by Parliament. But the issues that Parliament brings to life, like the voice, very often, and in this case, are not what you would call political. They are about the basic rights of First Nations people. And therefore, sport is saying, we believe in fairness, we believe in equality, and we want First Nations to have this right brought to life. Now, that happens to be through the voice to Parliament, which we need a referendum to actually manifest. And so, therefore, sport is doing absolutely the right thing. Sport is a social contributor. Sport is a member of society like any other industry. And surely, all of our industries and all of our bodies and every citizen has a responsibility to help shape the future of the country and what Australia looks like next year and beyond. That, I would think, would be patently obvious. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, Larry or anyone else, you know, there's a lot of people in Australia who have concerns about the voice. That's perfectly wonderful. All I'm saying is, let's keep the dialogue open, because there is information we're able to provide you through the handbook and elsewhere, where I think that ultimately, if you're capable of doing that, I think if you really believe in fairness and if you really believe in self-determination, you are going to change your mind.
Craig, if we could just come closer to home as we close the interview. You were instrumental with the FIFA World Cup in Qatar with regards to speaking up for human rights, the conditions of the migrant workers, the impacts on the LGBTQIA+ community, and you did say that that particular World Cup was the most problematic, controversial World Cup in history. How do you think that Australia should be managing the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia? Because, of course, we have our own issues closer to home with regards to human rights. Can you provide us maybe with an overview of where we stand regarding our human rights record in Australia and how we can capitalise on the Women's World Cup here with regards to having a voice?
Yeah, exactly. So, look, it's really, really important. So, as you said, the difference in football is that unlike most global sports, we actually have a human rights policy. Okay, so, and that's important for people to understand. And I'd like to see that across all of sport, but that's not yet the case. And therefore, what that practically means is that we have an obligation to uphold human rights right across the game, and to discuss them and to look at and think about and do formal audits on where they're being breached. And, of course, a big part of that is major sporting events. So the history of major sporting events, briefly, is about a lot of harm. So, for example, you know, the 2016 Olympics in Rio, you know, the police go into the favelas and remove a lot of poor people because they don't want it to look bad, or they want to build accommodation for someone. You know, in the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, all the homeless are cleaned up off the streets, and then they put them on buses and just ship them into another place and just put them on the street and leave them there. These types of things have always occurred when it came to major sporting events. And what we're saying now is, okay, that can no longer occur. You have a responsibility as a major sport to make sure that your sport has not only mitigates any negative impacts, but in fact, it has an opportunity to do more, to promote human rights and to have positive impacts. So therefore, we talked a lot about Qatar, and that was a pretty simple one because there were somewhere around 6,500 people who actually died while they were building the infrastructure for the event. So naturally, we needed to, you know, raise the alarm on that. And when it comes to the Australian World Cup, There has been a human rights audit done, and we have a range of issues. One is protest, for example, which is, you know, really at the forefront of the media at the moment in Australia. So freedom of speech and freedom of protest, which is called freedom of association, means that people should be able to, in a democracy, go to the street and make clear that they are concerned about various issues or policies, and that's being increasingly legislated away in Australia, particularly in relation to climate policy protest and activism. That has been identified as a concern, so we'll be talking about the right to protest during the World Cup. We'll also be talking about The Voice, which I think it would be wonderful. I'm hopeful, I don't know, but I'm very hopeful that the Matildas will be using their platform through the World Cup to actually help educate Australians on the importance of The Voice. They certainly should do so. And Football Australia was one of those organisations that came out in support of it only a few days ago. We have other issues in relation to migrant labour, for example, and we've seen some new legislation on that in recent years. So there are a range of issues where Australia is falling short. And when it comes to refugees, of course, we haven't fallen short. We've been in the absolute basement and we've probably created a new low, right? In the sense that we've harmed a lot of people in recent decades with our offshore detention system. So that will be talked about. And I think that's one of the powers of sport. Sport is now saying we have this obligation. We have refugee athletes. We have First Nations athletes. They need a protective environment. And, you know, that's not being provided for the following reasons. So it's going to be a wonderful tournament, but and it's also going to be, thankfully, an opportunity for us to look. Because the world will come here and there's about 1.5 billion people will watch the tournament, right? And one of the questions that those 1.5 billion people are asking is, how is your First Nations peoples the most incarcerated people on earth? One of them that they're asking is, how is it that your First Nations people in Australia, a wealthy, you know, first world country, that we know so much about in sport, you guys are incredible, how is it that your First Nations people die 10 years earlier? How is it that the health outcomes of your, and your education outcomes of your First Nations people are so horrendous? How did you guys let this happen? Those are really important questions. So when we host a major sporting event, countries are starting to find that it's not only promotion as it used to be and just pushing the message out, people are coming into the country and they're asking important questions. And they're saying, I'm here to play, but I can't close my eyes to what's happening to First Nations people there. I think that's fantastic, and I hope all the women players do it.
Pitch invader Mario, the Falcon Ferry, will be making a trip to the 2023 Women's World Cup. And if he did, which symbols do you think he would be wearing? Because at Qatar, it was phenomenal. He ran onto the pitch wearing the Portugal v Uruguay match, wearing a blue Superman T-shirt with the words Save Ukraine on the front and Respect Iranian Women on the back, while he held a gay pride rainbow flag above his head. It's going to be quite confronting, isn't it, depending on what he decides to wear here in Australia?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what he will do, but if I was in touch with him, and I might get in touch with him and see what's happening, I'd suggest that he should wear something around First Nation. That's the core issue in Australia. Now, we're talking about gender equality, and the Matildas represent that. You know, they've got equal pay and conditions with the Socceroos, and that's important. But ultimately, at the very heart of the country, you know, at the nerve centre of Australia is this inequality and disadvantage that goes to our First Nations people, the traditional owners. And I think if he was to amplify that issue, I think that would be fabulous, because the world will watch and say, well, hang on a minute. You know, we see the Aboriginal motifs on the Matilda shirt, and we see maybe you hold an Aboriginal flag, and we see all this stuff. It looks like a wonderful culture, and you guys are promoting it, but we didn't know that this stuff is happening behind here. You guys have kind of hidden that, and now this person brought that to life. So let's hope that it's not hidden. We need to have really challenging, important conversations about the rights of First Nations and how we're going to move this forward. And of course, that is ultimately what the Uluru Statement and Voice to Parliament is about, and why it's so incredibly important that we get the job done this year and take that first powerful step.
Craig Foster, thank you for your time today, for sharing with us insights into the Voice to Parliament, also a better understanding of what we can expect from the coming FIFA Women's World Cup that starts on the 20th of July. And thank you for your relentless pursuit of creating important conversations which are resulting in far-reaching outcomes about First Nations rights and racism, refugees, the age of incarceration, discrimination, migrant labour, exploitation, and for being a staunch ally for the LGBTQIA plus community.
It's been my pleasure to join you. And to everyone out there, please make sure that you do your work and do that reading on The Voice. Really important.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.